From the deranged mind of a madman with a microphone, it's a drinking podcast with a movie problem. You're listening to Not Suitable for Anyone.
How's it going, man? Luke Rodriguez, the one, the only, the famous Luke Rodriguez of modern horrors.
I know, famous is the right word, but I'm doing good, man. It's the first podcast, we were just talking about this, but it's the first podcast I've done in like 5 months or something like that. First time we've been on a podcast since at least August, which that's nuts.
Yeah, no, that's insane. It's absolutely insane. But time has like simultaneously like stood still and flown by. And I don't pretend to fully understand it, but I just roll with it.
Yeah, I mean, my daughter just turned 7 months old, and it feels like it's been 7 years and 7 days. Like simultaneously, it's been both of those things, like a blink of an eye and a lifetime. So I don't know, shit's getting normal again now. There's a lot of shit happening like in the horror sphere these days. So I'm anxious to get in front of the microphone again. So thanks for having me on here.
Yeah, no, awesome, man. I appreciate it. I have, I've been doing this for a few months now, and and it's going well, and I'm having a good time.
Yeah, yeah, and so many people, myself included, got kind of like, I don't know, not to get all like poetic and shit, but like I forgot why like me and Jacob started a podcast in the first place. It wasn't to be like media people. It was like fucking have fun and kind of shit on the media people a little bit. Like it was why we even started the thing. So yes, you're doing it for the right reasons. I think it's fun. The name is awesome. The artwork is awesome. I like what you're doing, man.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it, man. I appreciate it. So it's been a lot of fun. We've done a lot of I've met a lot of filmmakers this way, and it's been really cool. And not that you're not a filmmaker, because of course you are a filmmaker.
Well, I'm not shit until we put one out there, though, right? aspiring still up to this moment.
But I'm also, I'm also kind of branching out and doing some more stuff with the, having other podcasters come on. Trev came on and did an episode.
Nice.
Did one with Justin. I think Jeremy Burgess and I are gonna record something pretty soon. So it was bound sooner or later. You and I were gonna hook up and do this.
Yeah, it's awesome. I've kind of been wanting the Modern Horrors podcast to even be more of just the people of the Modern Horrors team. Like, not necessarily just like me and like one other co-host, regardless of who that may be, but like you or Justin or fucking John or whoever, so yeah, I'm probably gonna steal your mold a little bit going forward.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, because that was one thing, like when I first sat down to do this, I was like, I don't know, like are people gonna wanna listen to me week after week, saying the same shit and making the same stupid fucking jokes? And I'm like, even I get bored of me from time to time.
It's hard to believe.
And I was like, I don't know if I can get anyone to talk to me. But I just started sending out emails and stuff, and people are excited to talk about their movies, man. It's
amazing, isn't it? Like, it's amazing what you can achieve if you just ask, right? Like, that, if there's nothing else I've learned in the last, like, 5 or 6 years, it's like, if you ask for something, you're probably going to get it. Like, if you deserve it, like, you're probably going to get it, Like, yeah. it's pretty cool.
Well, your chances of getting it go up, like, infinitely if you just ask.
Right. And granted, I'm talking about fucking podcasts and websites here. In life, that shit doesn't work at all. Like, you can ask all day.
Yeah. Like, the episode that's going to drop tomorrow is is a dude that's made like 15 movies.
Yeah, you're telling me about him. And first of all, what the fuck, right? Like, I can't even just even if they're all bad movies, the logistics of making a bad movie are insane, and it's extremely difficult. 15 is nuts.
Yeah, it's just clockwork, man. Like one a year. And I think like that the one thing I didn't get into with him, which I would like to get to know him better, is like how to stay sane.
Yeah.
While doing that.
Yeah.
So it's got to just be like, like a schedule. Like it's just a very like regimented thing. And
well, I don't know, man. My buddy Aaron Murdy's in Nashville, who's done a couple of like Clowntergeist and did Death Ranch with Charlie Seeds not long ago. He's kind of gotten to the point to where he's making a movie or two a year. And granted, like they're all of a certain caliber. But I've been on set with that guy. He loves every second of it. I mean, his first one stressed him out and almost killed him and his set set on fire. And like, but I think that's the way everyone's first movie is kind of supposed to be.
That's what I'm hearing.
But at this point, he's just kind of knocking them out. Like, and like, he's having a good time. He's found a group of individuals, both cast and crew, that he kind of sticks with, so they know each other. It's all familiar. And they're not like high budget powerhouses or anything, but they're fun. And, you know, he's having fun and he's making a little bit of money making movies, which is what everyone's trying to, he's lucky to be able to be able to do that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's why I started this podcast, because it's not about, you know, it's not about good movies or bad movies to me. Like I like the stories and I like the people. And if, you know, if you're having a good time and you're enjoying what you're doing, making a movie, then that's going to come through in the final product.
And, yeah, more often than not, yeah.
Yeah. So, well, man, let's get into it, man. What are we talking about here today? I'll let you kind of tee it up.
Yeah, I was actually surprised you'd never heard of these movies before. But I guess it makes sense. Honestly, they're not talking about good movies, bad movies. I think, I don't know what I would call these movies. We're talking about Laid to Rest and fuck it. I mean, we'll throw some Chrome Skull, Laid to Rest 2 in their conversation just because. I watched them both recently. I ordered this German media book of them because Jake and Patrick have corrupted me and made me a physical media collector these days. But I hadn't seen these movies, either Laid to Rest or Chrome Skull. I haven't seen them since, golly, I mean, or probably right around when they came out. And they came out at a time, like, it was pre-Babadook, pre-It Follows, pre-It. pre-indie horror being cool. Like, when Chrome Skull and Laid to Rest came out, like, if you went to straight to video, you were a piece of shit still, you know?
Yeah, yeah. It was that time period. And it's not that I hadn't heard of these. I'd never seen them, that's for sure. But I'd always seen the poster, you know, when you're scrolling through Amazon or Tubi or whatever. And the poster does stand out, and it was always one of those, like, but I never heard anyone say anything about it. So I was like, well, and they were old, and I figured, well, if they're good and they're, you know, 10 years old at this point or more, you know, somebody would be saying, hey, you gotta check these out. Have you seen, like, nobody, you go online, like, there's no, you know, there's nobody on Twitter, like, you know, talking about Chrome Skull.
Right.
It's just not
enough.
There, at
least. Yeah. So I forget how these got put on my radar, honestly. I mean, they came out in a time when, I mean, not much has changed, honestly, in my life. Well, I mean, a lot has changed in my life, but my ravenous appetite for new indie horror has been the same for years and years. So I probably found it through another website like Bloody or Dread or one of those guys, if I had to guess. And I remember even at the time when my horror palette wasn't quite what it is these days. I remember watching these and thinking, well, it doesn't look very good. But then the more I watched it, the more these just outrageous kills started happening, and like, it becomes quickly apparent that, like, yeah, it's an indie movie, maybe it's not lit very well, maybe it doesn't have the best cinematography, but like, it's got the craziest kills. I mean, the director is he's an SFX kind of guru, so he's kind of doing what he does. So what both of these movies offer are kill sequences and SFX that you just don't get in a mini movies period, but let alone a movie shot for, I'm guessing, as little as these movies were made for, you know?
Yeah. They're
kind of unique in that regard.
Yeah, yeah. I'm guessing, I don't know, I tried, but I wasn't that successful finding, like, what the budget on these was, but I don't know if you know, I would guess they're, like, in that, like, $100,000 to $300,000 range. Like,
I would guess.
Not super, super high. They're not, like, you know, they're not scratching by, you know, crowdfunding budget, but...
Well, you mentioned that. It's funny because they actually started a crowdfunding campaign for Laid to Rest Exhumed, which is the third in the series. And I think they went to Indiegogo, and I think their budget, and I would imagine, I mean, who knows? I mean, I think House of a Thousand Corpses was a multi-million dollar movie, and then by the time he got to Three from Hell, he's working for hundreds of thousands of dollars at that point, you know? so I don't know if the Laid to Rest kind of followed the same pattern, but like... The campaign for the third one was asking for around $250,000, I think, somewhere around that. And I would imagine that's him asking for, like, to go bigger and better and harder than he's ever gone before, you know?
I would think.
So I would imagine these are under 250, the ones that we're talking about tonight.
Either way, that's a big ask for crowdfunding.
He didn't even come close, dude. Like, he got what you should ask for around crowdfunding for
like indie 20 hard, or 30 grand.
He got around 20 grand.
Yeah.
Which is by most standards a pretty successful campaign, but
that's, yeah,
hundreds of thousands. That's a tough ask, man.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Wow. I'm not surprised. Not too surprised he didn't get it, but this gets into I can't really call it a genre of movie, but it's a type of movie that I never really thought of as existing until I got into modern horrors and stuff, you know, writing for the website. But a movie that is made by a career makeup effects or special effects artist.
Yeah. Yeah. And now we've seen a few of those now.
Yeah. Yeah. Primal Rage, I think, was the first one I saw.
Yep.
That was Patrick McGee, who was like, that dude was legit. He was on like on Spider-Man and Spider-Man 2. And
Yeah.
You know, and even this one, Robert Hall, he runs SFX company, and like he worked on shit like Buffy and Angel and Firefly and fucking X-Files. And the Terminator TV show, which I think is where he met like half the cast for these movies.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. I never watched the Terminator. Are there a lot of people like crossing projects there?
So there are, yeah, like the main girl in the first one, I think, okay, was in a couple episodes. Actually, that's his wife, or his now ex-wife.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Thomas Dekker, who shows up at the very end of Laid to Rest, and then he's kind of a main character in Laid to Rest 2. Yep.
The emo boy in Laid to Rest 2.
Yeah. And Brian Austin Green, who's like the main star of Laid to Rest 2, he was like a regular on the Terminator series.
Wow. Yeah, then you're probably right. He probably recruited around there, at least made those relationships, if I had to guess.
Yeah.
But it comes through, man. That experience comes through in these movies. I mean, say what you will about a lot of the presentation elements about it, but I mean, so I was watching the special features of the media book that I got in the mail, and both of them have like making of featurettes, and they're both in English, which is fucking awesome.
Awesome.
So I was watching, and I learned that, yeah, the lead actress in the first one is indeed his now ex-wife, which makes sense why she didn't reprise her role in the second one.
I was going to say, yeah, it was in between the first and second.
Yeah, and why the second one plays out how it does in the first 10 minutes, I'm not too sure. But either way, it's a pretty cool thing to kind of see him talk about that relationship and like how the movie came to be and how he just kind of, he calls them kill movies. You're talking about subgenres and everything. And in the second introduction for Chrome School, Laid to Rest 2, Robert Hall says, yeah, we just wanted to make a good old fashioned, you know, the kind of movie that inspired me when I was watching horror movies growing up. He's like, it's a kill movie. And I never heard that before. Like, I've heard slasher movies, I've heard like paranormal, like all these other things, but yeah, splatter movies, but a kill movie. And I think that's probably the best way to think about these two things, because honestly, I mean, there's some bigger stuff happening in Chrome Skull too, but like, they're mostly kill movies. Like, that's what you're here for.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, that's what you get when you watch these movies that are made by special effects guys. Is you get, for better or worse, you get a story that is just there to get you from one special effects sequence to the next.
Yes.
Because that's what motivates them, and that's what they find interesting. So you get that, and then you get cinematography that is designed around the special effects to show off the makeup work and stuff. But you don't necessarily get cinematography like in general that's good for like, you know, for like basic like shot blocking and
right. I mean, the second movie especially, like the first one is just kind of, I wouldn't call it a mess or anything like that, but like it's incredible how many people, for its time it didn't look that bad, but like now it's kind of like on the lower tier of things. But the second one legit has some really cool moments. The moments where Chrome Skull goes inside the house and kills like the friend of the girl that's going blind in the kitchen. Like, I don't know whose house that was or what day that was done on, but the lighting was on point. Like, the kill sequences were awesome. I don't know, but other parts, like the beginning of the movie, doesn't look great at all. It looks like a whole different film crew like filmed the first 10 minutes of Chrome Skull. So I don't know. Fun fact about, I don't know if it actually was filmed by a whole second crew or not, but I was watching the credits and a name popped up, that I thought was kind of interesting. It was the second unit director, Ryan Spindle, from the Mortuary Collection. And I was like, I wonder if that's the same guy, because I think these are like Alabama-based movies, and I think he's from somewhere in that region, I think. I'm not really sure. But either way, it made me think, like, how many could there be? So I went to his IMDb, and like buried in there in Ryan Spindle's IMDb is a Chrome Skull too. Pretty nuts.
Yeah, how about that? That's pretty wild. I like that dude. He's a good guy. Everyone should check out Mortuary Collection. I should. I need to. I need to get him on. That's a funny thing when you go back like far enough. I got really into like Lucky McKee's filmography.
Yep.
And I guess Rian Johnson like edited I think it was May.
Okay.
So yeah, like apparently they were boys like back in the day. Now, you know, Ryan's out there like making Star Wars films.
Right. Nothing wrong. It's crazy how many of these people get started in like these, not just actors, but even like crew, like they, like indie horror is where so many people cut their teeth. Like it's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. And that's the other thing is, you know, with Robert Hall, like being in the industry is the cast in these two movies is pretty insane for, especially for the time, like maybe now it's kind of trendy for, you know, for big actors to go down and to go and do, you know, like, you know, super low budget movies.
Sure.
But
I mean, get at the time, like Sean Whalen popping up as Roach, like that's a cool get, you know, like, have you seen People Under the Stairs?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's been a while, but
yeah. So like that's Roach, like the guy that whose mom died and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a cool thing to see. And honestly, talking about the cast, the lead actress in the in the first one, his ex wife, the director's ex wife, in the making of sort of featurette, she's kind of talking about like this is her first even attempt at acting. Like she's never even tried to do something else before.
No shit.
So the fact
I never would have guessed.
Well, I know it's not the best, but all things considered, there are moments here or there where she's not that bad. And honestly, I've seen way worse from more credentialed actors, I would say.
Yeah. No. Well, it takes a lot of balls to. Because she is by herself for like large portions of that movie, or she's facing off one-on-one with Chrome Skull. Like she's carrying a lot of that movie.
Yeah.
So like that's a lot to put on, you know, the shoulders of somebody with no acting experience.
Yeah. And you know, we can poke fun a little bit. Like it is not great all the time. It's not even good all the time. But there are times where like it's she's good enough to where it doesn't really matter, to when all the cool shit that we're waiting for like pops off, we don't care about any of that stuff anymore. Like it's not a problem. It's not distracting.
Yeah, absolutely. And like the one that blew me away was I was watching it and like Lena Headey shows up for like a hot minute.
I don't know who that is.
She was on Game of Thrones. That was like the most famous thing she did.
Yeah, I'm the last motherfucker. You want to say something about Game of Thrones too? Like, I still have no idea. Yeah,
she was what's his name's wife in The Purge.
Ethan Hawke's wife.
Ethan Hawke's wife in The Purge.
Okay.
Yeah,
I got you.
So she's shows up. She's Kevin Gage's wife in this movie.
Oh fuck! Yeah. Okay, I know who you're talking about.
So literally, she's in like two scenes, and
she's
like,
not bad though.
Yeah, no, she's good. And then it was like, I guess she got too expensive because like they just have to knock her off and then move the story along.
But what a knockoff though. Like that is one of the most savage, like what Robert Hall does really, really well in these movies. Like, I mean, cause in these kill movies, so to speak, he has really nice, like impact kills, like things that you don't really see often. Like, and it's all relatively simple shit. Like most of it's done with a knife, but it's doing shit with knives that like people use knives to do. Like it's like you would carve up a deer or something with this. That's the kind of work that he's doing on these people. And it's fucking sick, man. Like he's putting it through skulls and like you can see the blade pop through their eyeball, like hole socket thing. Like it's graphic, like disturbing in some points.
Yeah. It's amazing. Like, especially like her kill, like I guess, and I mean, we're going to spoil the fuck out of this. Cause I mean, I don't think there's any like real, it's not like there's like a lot of like clever surprises in this movie.
No, and even if you do, like if I heard some motherfuckers on a podcast see like, oh, that scene where he jams the knife into her skull and you can see the blade through her eye socket thingy, I'm going to watch that movie. Like, I want to see that. I don't want to hear two guys talk about it. So let this inspire you to watch them.
Yeah. Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah. That's a great kill. Cause she's like hanging out the window. And he just like slams her head against like the side of the house. Yeah. And then there's another one, in that same sort of sequence, where the guy's like leaning over the car, like talking to his girlfriend in the car. And he just throws the knife from like, you know, from like 20 yards away, and it just like just jams like right through his mouth, and it happens all on frame. And that's one thing that I really appreciate, because so many movies, like, you know, a lot of times with low budget movies, like, they just have to cut away because they don't have, you know, they don't have the money to show those effects. But that, for him, like, that's the whole reason he's making the movie.
Yep. He calls it out actually in the featurette for the second movie. You know, it's kind of like a humble brag. He's like, you know, we're doing things that, like, not only people are afraid to do on camera, he's like, but people just can't afford it. And he's like, I'm basically doing it pro bono because it's my movie, you know, but this shit would be prohibitively expensive for most people.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
The films that can afford it would never do anything like this. So, you know, it's nuts.
Yeah. And I want a set of these knives, because these knives can apparently cut through anything.
Yes.
Like it's butter. Like, because that scene where the knife goes through the guy's face and then he kind of gets caught in the window, and he just runs the knife up, and it just chops off like shears off like half the dude's head, and like right through his skull and brain and everything. Like, I could use some of that, just, you know, like cutting up steaks and shit.
Just like bread, man. Like literally anything. I need anything I can cut that well. The guy that pulls up to the house that gets killed with his girlfriend in the car and everything, I found out watching the making of that, they were just trying to find, like, they're basically trying to like pad some runtime a little bit. I think they had like a better reason than that, but to me it seemed like, yeah, we're just trying to make things a little bit longer. So like, he called his boy, basically. He was like, hey, I need someone to come through and shoot this scene that we're working on right now. And he's like, can you do it? And he's like, yeah, no problem. He's like, well, do you know anyone that could like maybe scream sort of well and like be like your girlfriend in the movie? And his boy is like, oh, my girlfriend is right here. She said she'll do it. Neither one of them are actors at all. And, you know, the dude does okay, but I thought the girlfriend in that scene did actually some of the better acting in the entire movie. And turns out she was like a last minute call from some friend of a friend. It's very, very cool stuff.
Yeah. Well, she was probably in her defense, she was probably actually like freaked out.
I thought the same thing.
It's like, holy shit, I didn't know this is what you were into.
His fucking window breaks through and his face falls out. And dude, I mean, it's nuts. It's really, really cool. The like you said, most budget movies cut away. And then even if you do see something afterwards, it's the aftermath. It's the wreckage. You never really get to see, for lack of a better word, the penetration. Like, you never get to see it. It's really cool to get the penetration finally.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, and even with the girlfriend chick, like when she's like trying to like stuff her intestines back inside. Like, I love that kind of shit.
Yeah. Yeah. And also how casual that one is too, because she's just running around the corner and he gives her a quick like flick of the wrist and she keeps on running and you don't know anything's wrong until she sees the body of like the dead wife. And then finally has a moment to think and then her guts fall out. Like, it's, it's perfect. It's perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. It's absolutely amazing. I love that. And then, and somehow, this is the thing, where the script makes no sense whatsoever. Because somehow, while he's doing that, he's also had the time to go and, like, set up all this shit in the sheriff's office. Well, one, he has time to murder the entire sheriff's department. And then stage all of these corpses and stuff and, like, set cameras up and rig the camera to...
Well, here's the thing.
The door.
You can use revisionist history, because in the second one, you find out he's got a whole fucking like salaried staff working for him, right? So like, they could be killing fools and setting up cameras while he's icing hose in the fucking funeral home. You know, it gets bigger at some point. Now, do I think that was the intent? I do not. But you know, if you're doing revisionist history, you can make it make sense.
Sure, sure. Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of world building in that second movie, which is funny to me because it's shorter than the first one.
I didn't realize it was shorter. It doesn't necessarily shorter.
Yeah, it doesn't feel shorter actually. No. But I think it's about 10 minutes shorter or so. I think the first one is like you said, it may be like padded out a little bit probably unnecessarily. I think they had enough for an 85, 90 minute movie.
Yeah.
You know, without it. But hey, we got two extra kills out of it, so it's not like it's time wasted.
And that's probably the way he was looking at it too. He's like, man, I only got like 23 kills in this movie. I really need 25, you know? And let me call my boy real quick, see if he can get killed as a girlfriend. It's pretty nuts. I have a lot of respect for what these guys did. That second movie, like you said, the world building, I did not see it coming, because that is so the opposite of what the first movie is. Like, the first movie is literally woman wakes up in a casket, doesn't know who she is, guy's trying to kill her. Like, that's the movie, you know? Right. And like, you don't really, you get like, yeah, you get an answer, you know, by the end, but it's not a very satisfying one. It's pretty weird, actually.
It actually raises more questions than it answers. It really does. I don't think that's how amnesia works.
Yeah, what the fuck does she have, right? I kept waiting for it to be like some drug that she had been administered or something, but it just seems to be like she got hit on the head really hard. She doesn't remember anything, and everyone around her is just acting like it's probably never going to come back, so it doesn't matter what you were in your past life. It's like this motivation, like, you know, you can overcome, like, so what, you were a hooker, like, you can be anything going forward from today, but, like, it'll come back. Like, she just got hit in the head, man. Like, it'll be okay.
Yeah, it's just wild. The other thing, and I realize they keep them isolated, but they're, like, at one point, the guy says, like, she wakes up in the funeral home, she calls 911. So somehow she knows to dial 911, but she calls, like, a casket a dead box. Yeah. 'Cause she doesn't know the word for casket.
Yeah, I mean, look, I get it. That got me too, man. That got me too. That whole story ripple didn't really make a lot of sense for me. Like, again, if we're talking about amnesia here, like, that's not how that works, nor does it really like add to the movie in any way. Like, why does like having a conversation with the 911 operator and calling it a dead box other than a casket, like, what does that do for us? You're like, I don't really understand.
Yeah. But then the guy in the car tells her that, like, oh, you called 911, that's city, that's 100 miles from here. And like, okay, I concede that there are places in this country where you are probably 100 miles from a police station. But we find out that this movie takes place somewhere between Miami and Atlanta on the Eastern Seaboard.
Yeah. So I thought about that one too. And honestly, this is really what happened in my last watch through just a couple nights ago. I had the same thought, like, oh, you know, sugar, we're 100 miles away from the nearest police station. And I was like, what kind of town? Ah, fuck it. And just kept on watching. The thought to question it in my head popped up, and I was like, you know what? Who cares? You know, whatever.
Yeah, no, I mean, they're just trying to keep everyone isolated. It's the same reason that nobody has gas in this movie. Like, every car they get in has no gas.
Right.
That happens like two or three times. They're just trying to.
Did Chrome Skull have like a customized hearse outside of the funeral parlor? Like, I feel like when he pulled away, that hearse was like customized.
Yeah, it looked like it.
I don't understand. But I guess, again, he has the whole team full of people. I just feel like in a small town, world travels fast. And that sticks out a little bit.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Jesse Chromians, a.k.a. Chrome Skull, is a complicated, multifaceted individual.
Yeah.
As we find out by the end of chapter two.
Well, let's talk about Chrome Skull real quick. How did you feel? Because, like, being a slasher isn't easy. Like, I like listening to Kane Hodder talk about, like, all of the little things I never even, like, noticed whenever I was watching Friday the 13th movies. He said he never wanted Jason to appear weak. So if you notice, like, even whenever Jason's walking through a fucking window or something, like, his eyes never look down. Like, he's always looking up. He's always confident. He's always, like, forceful. So, like, there's little things like that that these people that play slashers sort of take into consideration. And I thought that the guy that plays Chrome Skull did pretty fantastic.
I thought he did good, but I also thought he played, it felt like, and it wasn't the actor, it was really more the writing. He felt more human than like your typical slashers. Cause like he gets hurt, like he gets stabbed, he gets knocked down.
Yeah. I mean, he is a human, right? I mean, I know his origins are sort of, you know, mysterious, but like, I don't think we're ever given the idea that he's anything but human.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. But he gets like, he gets like stabbed in the shoulder at one point, or like, you know, and like Kevin Gage is like beating ass with that cane. He's like whops him with the cane, and then he does kind of fall over. But then like later in the movie, he like takes a bullet like directly to the mask, and it just kind of deflects off of him. But yeah,
it's crumb planning, baby.
But that's one thing that I thought was interesting about it is like he's human, and they sort of have the physics of him react as though he's human.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, to me, it seems like, not that we necessarily get this answer, but to me, it seems like he's some rich doctor guy that's making little snuff films on the side. And I mean, like, and when we say rich, I mean like rich to be pulling off the shit that he's doing.
Yeah.
So I don't really know what profession that would lie in exactly, but he seems to have medical knowledge. He can stitch himself up on the fly. He's making some surgical fucking cuts with some knives. Again, watching the making of thing, the guy that plays Chrome Skull actually moved to L.A. with the sole purpose of becoming a stuntman and becoming Michael Myers. It's really his only thing that he said that he looked at the people that had played Mike up to a certain point. He's like, you know, they always get these stuntmen to do it, and these stuntmen don't know, you know, how to walk or how to do these things. And he's like, I feel like I understand that stuff. So he moves out to L.A. To become Michael Myers, starts kind of with this kind of Chrome Skull role, parlays that into, I mean, if you look at this guy's IMDb, he's been, if you've got a slasher in an indie horror movie, chances are he's in there. Eric England's first movie, Madison County, he's the Damien Pig guy, whatever, he's that. I forget some of the other ones, but he's got several entries on his IMDb where I'm like, well, no shit, I never really thought about anyone like being that. Like, he's like the Lin Shea. Like, if you need an old person, what you call Lin Shea to be in your horror movie. Like, yeah, if you need someone that's, you know, a competent slasher who you never see their face, you call this guy.
Yeah. He's a big dude. He looks like a big dude.
He looks a little bit bigger in the second one than he does the first one. The first one, he's kind of, you know, he's clearly like a pencil kind of guy. And then the second one, he's kind of a beefcake all of a sudden. And I want to talk about that really quick because,
mm-hmm,
continuity wise between the first one and the second one, they really take part, like, what, it kicks off the same day, the next day, something like that.
So it starts right where the first one ends, because first one, like, she comes out of the gas station and she tells like the, you know, Thomas Dekker, John Connor, I left a note, let's go, and he's like, well, all right, and they drive off to Atlanta, and then they basically, like, they didn't even reshoot. They played that exact same scene.
Yeah.
Except they edited it so that you couldn't see, Princess, the girl, because later, like, when they get to the hotel, it's a completely different actress.
Yep.
But it basically starts with that scene, and then they come in and like kind of clean up the crime scene, and then it, like, jumps in time forward like 3 months.
That's right. Point. Yeah. So, because it was kind of bugging me that Emo Boy, John Connor, I guess, did not, his hair was so much longer. And I was like, I feel like this is supposed to be the next day. Why is his hair like so much longer? But I can't remember if we see his hair, if it's like under a beanie or something in that opening scene, or if he's gone full emo at that point. I forget. But I just feel like some of the continuity stuff was a little weird. But honestly, that whole first 10 minutes or so is just so weird. It's not particularly well made. It does set up that world building, which is important. But I feel like the rest of the movie is infinitely better than that opening sequence is.
Yeah. I kind of had my eyebrow up the first 10 minutes of that. Once 90210 comes in and kills the chick, then I'm like, okay, we're back to normal, because he like slashes her like right like across the mouth.
It's a good one.
It's like the Joker.
Yeah,
you know, she's got the Joker smile
style
now.
Yeah, yeah.
There's
a couple of those. There's another one that I like. Whenever I think it's the police officer, the female police officer, is running up the stairs, and he kind of throws the ninja star knife thing like above her, and then basically like opposite, think of a pair of scissors not closing but opening in your mouth, like, and then that happens. It's a very fucked up idea.
The second one really becomes, I said this, I think, and I think it was really when I was watching the second, it really becomes like if Saw was a slasher, Because the kills get a little bit more like gimmickier, and I don't mean that like in a negative sense. I just mean like they get a little bit more like crazy. There's more gadgets. It's more than just like straight knives and stuff. Like he's got the thing with the with the knives all welded together in the center and stuff. And it almost feels like if you took that Saw kind of sensibility and said, okay, I'm just gonna make this into a slasher instead of like doing a bunch of like crazy traps.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't think it was bad necessarily, but it didn't really, the violence didn't really hit me the same way, except for a couple of kills, as it did in the first movie. Because they are, I mean, by production standards, they're bigger, they're grander, they're more exciting, I'm sure, from like a filmmaker standpoint. But for me, like, I think it's way more hardcore just ram someone's head through the side of their house with a knife, like in their head, like that's insane. Or just chopping the front of someone's fucking face off like it's a piece of salami. Like I like that stuff. In the second one, you've got like people getting chrome plated and like kind of Jason X styled against the side of the thing. Like it's just more crazy.
Awesome. Right?
I
was watching that going, oh, this is going to be the best kill in the franchise right here. And then I watched it like happen. I watched it a second time and I'm like, that's, you know, I kind of like some of the other stuff a little better. Like the, like in the first one, when he had the tire foam.
Oh, that was spraying so inside the dude's ear. That was so bad. Yeah. I would say that might be one of the, that might be one of the top ones, in as far as the franchise is concerned, if we can call it that after two movies. That one's really bad.
Yeah. My favorite is in it's one of the cops, and I forget which one, in Chrome Skull 2, where he stabs the guy like with the knife blade like this way. And then just like runs it up the guy's face, and his head just kind of like splits.
See that it's got that like serrated edge on the end of the knife, and it's literally like you're cutting open like wildlife if you're a hunter or something. He just sticks it in and just racks it up. It's really cool. It's simple, it's effective, cool to see. It's almost weird. Like I kept waiting for someone to like come upstairs and like watch me watch these movies, and like I had this realization, like I have no defense for this. Like there's no redeeming quality to these movies other than how cool it is to watch these people be massacred, you know. And I was like, completely transparent, I am so okay with that. Like I am so cool with that. But like just that conversation to like to outsiders coming in and seeing Chrome Skull are laid to rest, I have to imagine it'd be a jarring experience.
Yeah. It's not like, it's different than like a Serbian film where if somebody like questions you about it, you could like launch into like a 25 minute, like pretentious, speech about how important it is and you know, all the symbolism in it.
Yeah. And anti-censorship and you know, how the cinematography is actually pretty good when you look at it, you know?
Yeah, well, and even talk about how, like, well, like, you know, our government fucks us since birth, so, like, that's why we,
Do people actually say that?
I have heard that exact, like, defense of the movie. Yeah.
Wow. That's funny.
And apparently that was his point. It's just like, okay, that's a little on the nose, don't you think?
Holy shit. So that's been confirmed by like the director, that was like the symbolism he was going, oh, what the fuck?
That was literally like the message that he wanted to send.
I gotta tell you, that's not the one I received. you know? Either way, I see what you're saying though, because Laid to Rest, no such argument can be made. I mean, the director calls it a fucking kill movie, man.
Yeah, no, it's just a showcase. It's like a sizzle reel for a special effects guy. And it's probably, I don't know, I imagine it's gotten him work.
Well, that's the thing.
He had work before it, too. But
yeah,
you know.
I mean, but so these movies have a pretty solid fan base. Like people really, really enjoy them. I paid more than I would like to admit for the German media book that I got, and the people on Instagram were going like, "How do I get one?" And I got it on eBay. I'm surprised that he didn't hit his crowdfunding. I'm not surprised he didn't hit his crowdfunding, but I'm surprised he couldn't get $250,000 from someone else to make the movie that he wants to make, because I have a feeling he could make that money back given the maybe I'm completely out of touch with reality, but I would think they would be able to make that money back, given no one makes anything like this right now. Like, no one's doing it like this. And if he came back, given how popular, like, Twitch and live streaming and stuff like that is, tie that in with the Chrome Skull angle, like, this, that story makes more sense now than it did whenever the movie first came out. Like, in fact, it might be almost derivative these days, but they were doing it way before then, you know?
They were, yeah. That's the, there were a lot of like early 2000s internetisms in here that I feel like were dated even like when, even for 2009. I'm like, no, I think we were more sophisticated than this even in 2009. Like when he's trying to, when the dude's trying to like email the police station.
Oh my God.
And
yes.
it's like a bulletin board thing where he has to like answer all these questions.
It's like a GeoSites like website or something. Like it's crazy. Like, yeah.
I'm like, no, that was like the internet in the late 90s, not, you know, 2009. But the one I think it was in Chrome Skull 2 that made me laugh, because he had the chick going blind, and she had her little video camera, which they never really paid off in any meaningful way, but she was doing her video diaries. Yeah. And her friend's like, oh, do you make YouTubes?
YouTubes. Yeah. Dude, speaking of that camera, do you remember those flip cameras? Those were like,
I do.
Everybody had those things, man.
Yeah. I think I still have one. I probably have one.
I probably do somewhere. Of course, mine drawer somewhere. Yes, I modded mine. I had different lenses and shit for it. Like, ridiculous.
Of course you did.
Yeah, of course I did.
I still have my mini DV in the drawer behind me here. And I still have like, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 hours worth of mini DV tapes.
Let's fucking fire it up. Hit the woods, so, buddy. Yeah. Let's make a movie.
It was the biggest pain in the ass getting those videos to transfer off of those tapes.
I remember. Or even watching them on a TV. You had to have like an 1/8-inch cord going to like a composite video into your, like it was a pain in the ass just to do anything with them.
Yeah. I had like an IEEE 1394 FireWire to USB.
FireWire was the worst, dude. Like, it was fast as fuck, but, like, no computers had FireWire.
No, well, that's why I had to get a cord that was FireWire at one end and USB at the other, and then I could hook it up to my computer, but it would only transfer the, I think it would only transfer the video file over, like, in, like, 1-to-1 time.
Yeah, oh, fuck. Yeah.
And if you, like, moved the cord at all, then, like, the data would get fucked up.
Yeah.
It was a pain in the ass.
So needless to say, mounting one to your goddamn shoulder would be challenging to do during such rigorous activities.
Yeah, but nowadays you've got GoPros and stuff. I mean, this was before all of that.
Really ahead of its time when you think of it that way. Like these days, this movie would come out and it would not have kills like this. Like it wouldn't. But like this movie could totally be released. Or probably has been released 10 times, you know, already with the way current technology works. So maybe that's why investors didn't want to get involved. Or maybe he didn't want investors to get involved because he wanted to make his own movie. But, like, he's been making his own movies, and I think he had investors involved in the last one. So, I don't know, man. I hope we get a third one.
Yeah. Where would you see a third one going? I have some ideas. But I know that they kind of left it open at the end of Chrome Skull, where he's like, I guess he's supposed to be in Hollywood.
Yeah, he's gone to whatever, like LA. And I don't really understand the significance of that location. I was thinking like, motherfucker's gonna be in Tokyo or something. I was like, now that would be dope.
Well, I think they were showing all the street performers and stuff. So I guess the idea was he can just kind of blend in with like other like, you know, like freaks on the street or whatever, and just walk around in broad daylight. Cause he can't walk around anymore without his mask on, because his face is all
fucking
fucked up.
Freak, yeah, yeah. No, that makes sense. That makes sense. Or like New Orleans, Mardi Gras kind of thing, but I guess Hatchet kind of has that covered. Like Adam Green's got New Orleans on lockdown, I think. So I don't know, man. Honestly, is LA that fucking weird? Are there people just walking around in costume at all times of the day?
That's a big thing, especially like Hollywood Boulevard.
No,
because
shit.
Tourists come there. Yeah, tourists come there to see the Walk of Fame and stuff. So you have a lot of like street performers that just dress up as characters, and most of the time they're not authorized or whatever. And they'll like charge you like $20 to get to like take your picture.
Yeah.
Or whatever. Don't you remember? The Fanatic, the John Travolta movie.
Yeah.
Where he like dressed up as a British like you know, yeah,
I mean, I remember, but it wasn't like the streets weren't flooded with John Travolta's dressed up like in this last scene. And honestly, I think the footage in that last scene was real footage of Hollywood Boulevard. And then clearly it is that it is that way because that's what that scene showed us, you know?
Yeah, no, I there's no way he got hired extras and got permits. Like, they just basically just stole that footage. Yeah.
And there's a couple people, like, as he passes them, like, turn around and look like, what the fuck is that? Like, it's pretty funny, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hilarious.
But knowing that, I feel like now that we've talked about that, where do I want to see the third one go? Like, that sounds like a pretty cool idea to me. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think now it's like it's been 10 years now because it was 2011, like when Chrome Skull came out. So I mean, I feel like you have to update it somehow. Like, you've got to take all of these like social media type thrillers, you know, and do something that you know, that they're not doing besides just the kill. I mean, we'll have the kills, because that's the whole point of these, but
so,
I don't know.
Like, I guess that's the question. Like, do you have to do something? Because, like, the first two movies didn't do anything that no other movie had done before. It just had amazing fucking kills, right? So, like, can we release a movie in 2021 onward that, like, just doesn't really give a fuck? I mean, not that they didn't give a fuck about the story, but you know what I mean. Like, they meant to write a narrative and all that good stuff, but it's not the it's not what the point is necessarily. The point is the kills.
Right.
So, like, can you still do... Terrifier tells me you can still do that these days.
That's true. Because that has a big fan base.
Huge.
That made a bunch of money. And they had a big crowdfunding for Terrifier 2, didn't they?
I think so. They might have gotten in that 100-plus range because their fan base is nuts, dude. Like
yeah.
They're super passionate.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So, yeah, I mean, maybe they don't. You know, I'd like to see, like, basically, like, Chrome Skulls, like, plural, just, like, a bunch of copycats.
Mm.
Out there,
we
kind of
got close
shit.
To that in the second one, right? Like the
well, that was yeah, that was the whole like that was the whole I guess like B plot with Brian Austin Green and Chrome Skull, where he like got a taste for murder, I guess.
Actually, these knives are pretty fucking good, you know. Like, I can understand, I can see why he likes this. Yeah. Oh, funny thing about that guy. So you know that scene where he says "fuck it," like I'm going to war with this motherfucker, and takes his shirt off and gets the Chrome Skull tattooed on his chest and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I was watching that scene, and look, man, I've got tattoos, and I was like, dude, someone's getting a tattoo. I was like, this footage is like close as hell. It's macro. I can see the needle going in and out, and the ink and the blood coming out around it. I was like, someone's getting a fucking tattoo here, right? Watch the making of. The guy that plays Chrome Skull actually got that tattoo on his back. The footage that you are seeing in the movie is him getting that tattoo on his back, which is why it looks so fucking real. It is.
I would say it looks really good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
the funny part of that, the thing that made me that cracked me up about that is like right before that scene, he's talking to Emo Dude and the Blind Chick.
And which just like, is like a band name I've ever heard of. Emo Dude and the Blind Chick. That's I would buy that record.
And you know, and then he just like leaves, and he just leaves them there, like not they're not tied up or anything. He doesn't kill him. He doesn't handcuff him. He doesn't do anything to him. He just walks away, and he goes and gets a tattoo.
Yeah. Which, by the way, like I understand you got the salaried staff that's cleaning up crews, and you got fake ambulances. They're planting cameras, but you got a tattoo artist on site. Like, what are you guys doing, right? Because he just goes to the basement with a sketch and is like, "This right here, put it on the chip." Yeah, okay, brother. And gets busy. They also got like the. Like the prop department, like where he takes the design of like the ninja star blades to the people making weapons that they have on staff, and he's like, "Oh yeah, just pretend like you have a pair of scissors and two knives facing inwards, and make them in a circle." You guys understand? And I'm like, "Oh yeah, we understand." Goofy as hell, but I love the idea of like this crazy person having this paid staff of like murder weapon builders and tattoo artists just to like make yourself look like even more of a badass.
Yeah, I absolutely love that stuff. That cracks me up. And then the end. So I was trying to figure this out, and I think like when the cops show up, right, and Chrome Skull kind of like escapes through the tunnel.
Yep, side hatch.
And he does manage to like rescue the blind chick. Even though it was hilarious, like he doesn't know where she is. He's just like calling out to her in the warehouse. And she's like, oh, you know, like, I'm over here. And he's just like, you're safe now. And I'm like, no, she's not.
How could you possibly know that? Like, yeah.
Like, you don't know where Chrome Skull is or anything. But he manages to, like, rescue her. And then, like, the FBI shows up. But I'm pretty sure the FBI dude was, like, part of, like, the Chrome Skull team, right?
I kept thinking that, too, but I don't think so. Like, I think they kind of gave that vibe a little bit. And I could understand it. I kept thinking it was the dude from... like the little nerdy dude from the beginning of the movie at the but it's not him. The FBI agent is. It looks a lot like him, but he's like 20 years older. Okay. But I had the same thought though. But I do think it's purposely like ambiguous that like the FBI just kind of takes over and is like, oh yeah, we were watching this by the way, and give us all your files on everything that you saw here. Like I do think that they planned on this story kind of continuing, and that's the perfect like segue to make that happen. Yeah.
And then the guy just tells him like, oh, you can get it from my replacement. Right. And he just walks away. I'm like, wait, did he just quit?
Yeah. Also, like, you can't just tell the FBI, like, you got to tell your boss and shit. Like you can't just tell this guy.
Yeah. Oh, that was wild. But yeah, I like, I like all that stuff in the warehouse. That's the funnest part. That's like the main, part of this movie. They keep talking about those phones being like super advanced and costing $10,000.
Yeah, what the fuck is that about? So here's the thing. You mentioned the date range before, like the timeline or whatever the fuck you want to call it. Like I know it was made in 2000. What was it, 2009?
2009 is when the first one was released.
Okay. So, but what is it set in 2009 or is it set in like the 90s?
That's a good question.
Because technology is way more advanced than it's portrayed in this movie.
Yeah.
But they treat it like it's the 90s. And, like, I can't remember if, like, Sean Whalen drives, like, a Hyundai, like, an 03 or something. Like, I can't remember if anything like that, like, gives it away.
They do a good job not really, like, dating the movie with anything specific.
Other than the tech.
You know, yeah. And even, like I bought my camcorder, my mini DV in 2005, and it was pretty much state of the art at the time. I mean, like there were a couple on the market that would record direct to DVD, and there were some hard drive based camcorders, but those were like super expensive. Like at the consumer level, you know, like mini DV was
it's hard to think like how fucking long ago 2005 was. I mean,
it was almost 16 years ago because my kid turned 16 this year, but. Scary, right?
So, like, in my brain, like, oh, 2005, we had, like, iPhones and shit, you know?
I mean, almost.
iPhone
was 07.
Even that first iPhone was garbage. Smartphones didn't become what they are now for several years after that. So, I don't know, man. Maybe the tech isn't. I mean, I think it is still kind of lagging behind where it was in reality, but, like, maybe it wasn't as advanced in the mid-2000s as we were remembering, or you think it was.
Maybe not, but there's no way that phone was 10 grand, even in 2005.
No matter how much chrome plating is on it.
and China at no point had like the best, most advanced phones. I don't know where that came from.
In fact, they had the cheapest phones.
All right. So my question is... did you watch the post-credit scene at the end of Laid to Rest 2?
So I didn't know there was one until you mentioned it.
Hey, everybody. Sorry for interrupting the flow here, but I did want to break in with a real brief trigger warning and content warning because we're about to get into the post-credit scene on Chrome Skull 2, which involves a suicide. And we talk about it kind of casually, and we actually kind of joke about it a bit, in part because that's literally how the movie itself treats the scene. So, you know, we didn't mean any, you know, disrespect or anything, and I think that most people know that, but if hearing something like that is going to be upsetting to you, then I just want you to have that knowledge and forewarning, and feel free to skip ahead by 90 seconds right now.
So I didn't know there was one until you mentioned it. I forget like if it was in our text thread or in Slack or whatever. I did watch it this time, and I thought you were. I have questions because I thought you were telling me that like, hey, there's a post-credit sequence, and like it alludes to Chrome Skull having a wife, which is crazy and does happen. But I thought you were saying that, like, she's going to pick up the torch and be the killer going forward, and that is not the case.
No, that is not what happens at all.
What happens in reality is far more unnecessary.
It's, and knowing, like, that he chose to tack this ending on to the end of Chrome Skull 2, and it was after his divorce, and he decides he's going to give Chrome Skull a wife and then make this scene is just...
A pregnant wife. Yeah. A pregnant wife. And then makes her shoot herself in the fucking head. I actually had not thought about it in that context until you mentioned that. Yeah, it might not be a coincidence.
And right in the mouth.
A little bit of aggression we're getting worked out there.
Yeah, like no hesitation whatsoever. Just oh, like she sees the pictures of, you know, of like of all the shit he's been doing, and she's like, oh, it's over. I'm
fuck it, man. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, but that does bring another question, because as I was watching Chrome Skull this time, you know how Daniel Harris the whole time is kind of like hyping him up and getting him back on track, and sort of she's like his Apollo Creed for like the middle section.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah.
Well, whenever she, you know, shaves his head and gets him, you know, amped up to go back out there, he kind of turns and goes to like some woman's body, like under a sheet, and like gives her a kiss, and then come like a big, like the camera zooms in, it's a big sloppy, nasty, like, you know, mutant face kiss, and then he just leaves. Did I, like, what the fuck was that? Like, who was that body he kissed?
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't get that either.
Because I thought you were, I thought that was going to be the wife. Like, she's all fucked up and monstrous, and this is why, like, I thought that's what the post-credit scene was going to be, and it was going to make that make a lot more sense, but no.
Yeah, no.
No.
No. And they never, that's the one, the funny thing is, like, all the, like, gruesome, like, vicious and mean-spirited shit in this movie, They don't ever show you or explicitly tell you what he does with the bodies in the coffins.
Yeah, or what it's all for, other than, like, which I honestly see that as a selling point. I like the mystery, kind of like the going back to the Carpenter Halloween. Like, I like it not knowing. Like, yeah,
sure,
I think that's cool. To your point, all they say is that, like, he kills these people and then sends pictures to the police saying, hey, I just killed these people. Like, that basically is his whole game, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, but his understudy character, like, makes it seem like he does something else. Like, cause he like tells the blind chick, he's like, you want to know what he does to him? What he does
and he whispers
in the coffin, and then he whispers into her ear. And then, like, in that post-credit scene with his wife, she's flipping through the photos, and you can't actually see the photos that she's talking about, and where he's like, why is he on top of her like that? So, huh. I can only assume he's fucking these bodies, either before or after they're dead, in the coffins.
But every time we see in a coffin, they're just in pieces. I mean... Not saying, you can fuck anything, you know, like, I mean, you can. So I'm not one to question necessarily, but that's weird. That's weird.
Yeah. Yeah. That's weird stuff.
A little more of that in the third one, perhaps.
Yeah, sure. Why not? But it's funny that, like, that's where he draws the line.
Yeah, like, wait, who draws the line? The director or
the director? Yeah, no, that's where the director draws the line. Okay, yeah, I'm going to make a lot of sick, fucked up shit, but I'm not showing anybody that. Which, I don't know, I guess if you are to draw a line, it's as good a one as any.
I don't know, man. I'm trying to think if I've ever seen that in a horror movie before. And if I haven't, then fuck, man. Maybe Robert Hall, maybe that's his. You go back to your investors, say, I need $250,000 because we're going to fuck some dead people. See what happens now. I bet they pay up.
Yeah. You just got to call it an art film. The money comes rolling in.
Get Aronofsky involved somehow. Yeah. Like
Lars von Trier.
Yeah, even better.
I want the deal Lars von Trier has, because, like, most of his movies do not make money. They don't.
Nor do they get reviewed particularly well.
But he still gets like $10 and $20 million to make his films from somewhere.
Yeah.
It's wild.
Look, I mean, Danzig's out here getting multi-million dollar deals to make what he's making. And Robert Hall can't get $300,000. Come on, guys.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, that's the thing about because I get into these like arguments all the time about bad movies, and I get yelled at sometimes for liking bad movies, and
I appreciate your passion for one. I make fun of you all the time. I do love the way that you are, though. So,
well, thank
you. Never change.
Thanks. You know, I think there's a difference between something like this and Veronica, which like I got really nothing out of Veronica.
Rage. I only got rage. Like, and some laughs, some like exasperated, exhausted, confused laughter. Like, maybe it was just delirium at that point, but like,
right,
it wasn't even like so bad it's good or so bad it's funny or it's a midnight crazy movie that's so, it wasn't entertaining, it wasn't gross, it wasn't anything other than apparently expensive. And I just don't understand. I mean, I guess the Danzig name, right? Like, that's how you justify that. And maybe Veronica made a shit ton of money on VOD. I don't know. But
yeah,
it bums me out when I see people like this who can't deliver, who has a proven track record and a rabid fan base and still can't get, you know, a few hundred grand. It's weird.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's kind of my point. What sort of what I was getting at is that you know, that's frustrating. And I've seen, you know, there's a movie I did an episode on several months ago that reminded me a lot of Veronica. Like, it's just really bad. It doesn't make any fucking sense. It's got these really, like, cartoonish, like, CGI effects and just, like, really weird editing. Seriously, the kind of, like, when you were eight, and making movies, and like you were shooting like your brother, you know, and then like you cut the camera and you take his shirt off, and then you turn it right back on and make it look like his shirt just disappeared all of a sudden. Like,
right,
there were like those kind of level like special effects.
And you expect just like the bing sound effect whenever it happens. Yeah. Like, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, it was that kind of movie, but you know, but they spent like it cost like, you know, $5,000 to make.
Yeah,
you know, because they didn't know what they were doing, and they were just like, "Let's just get some friends together, and you know, and rent some space, and you know, and like, so that I can enjoy, like, you know." But you spent $1 million that could have gone to like, you know, something good.
Yes,
that pisses me off a little bit.
I agree with you 100%. It's part of the reason why we get so much shit, or at least we used to get so much shit on the website for like reviewing two different movies, a seven, for example. And one of those movies is like the new Blumhouse Halloween, and the other one of those movies is like some crazy shit that Patrick has seen. But like it's really not the same. Like Blumhouse is going to get shit for not taking risks because they can afford to do more than what they're doing. Whereas like, so if they don't do those things, then like, yeah, you know, throw some tomatoes at them because like, hey, you could have done more. You just opted not to. With the other people, like they're swinging up, you know, like they're overachieving. So I think it's a lot. I think it's a lot easier to reward that and to score, not necessarily on the same scale. It's on the same scale, but like all movies are not created equal by any means. So you can't score them the same way.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you could think of it as like a degree of difficulty, or you could think of it as sort of like, you know, like punching outside of your weight class.
Yeah,
a little bit. You know, when you see something that is, you know, clearly, you know, clearly from a lower tier, but it looks just as good, you know, than you as something, you know, higher end. I mean, you can make some allowances and you can let some things go that you maybe wouldn't forgive in, you know, a Blumhouse picture.
Yeah. And honestly, man, these quote unquote bad movies are fruitful for a lot of people. I mean, I know you talk about it all the time, and I've still never seen all of the first movie, but Bagman, right? Objectively speaking, Bagman is not shot, acted, anything like that particularly well. Is it funny? I've only seen the car lock scene. That is funny. Yeah, I mean, it's just
funny as hell.
Again, objectively speaking, that is funny, but it's not a well-made film by any stretch of the imagination. I don't think they would argue that, but they got the experience, they got the reps in, and the stuff that they're working on now and sharing is not even in the same universe. So like, sometimes you gotta kind of see that nugget of the idea, that nugget of like potential, And, like, you know, reward that. And maybe that's all these people need is just one motherfucker with a podcast or a review that says, like, you know what? These guys are doing something kind of cool. And that motivates them to actually go on and be, like, badass filmmakers. Like, sometimes that's all it takes.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's why I'm here, man. That's what it's all about. That's yeah, what I love,
I
mean, about
this. I think that's legit, like, what's cool about this show. So, appreciate you having me on, man. Laid to Rest is fucking absurd. If you guys haven't seen him, if this didn't do it for you, I don't know what would. Well, to be honest, if this didn't do it for you, stay far, far away from these movies, because it doesn't get any better. It only gets worse than what we talked about.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure. And they're pretty easy to find. You know, well, you know, you don't have to go and track down a German media book and pay.
No, it's stupid.
You
know,
far
don't
too much, like Luke did.
Yeah,
you can watch Laid to Rest. You can actually watch them both right now on Tubi TV, and Chrome Skull Laid to Rest 2 is on Amazon Prime, and I think the VOD like rental prices, if you don't want to deal with ads or whatever, it's like $3 or $4. I mean, it's not hard to find.
Yeah,
and. And yeah, I mean, I think you get your money's worth. It's a hell of a lot better than Jason X.
Yeah. I can say with confidence it's a hell of a lot better than Jason X. In fact, what came first? The liquid nitrogen face smash or the chrome plating face smash?
I think, wasn't Jason X like 2001?
I don't know. So probably Jason X then.
I think, I don't know, you know,
It's the question that people are wondering right now. So
that's right.
I think if we wait and take some time and look into
it's on everyone's mind. Yeah, Jason X came out in 2001.
Okay,
so that came first, and that's the only cool kill in that entire movie.
Yeah, true. And then they nailed it, and they had probably more of a budget than Robert Hall had on this one here.
Yeah,
but still, and honestly, that's one of the only kills in the entire franchise, and it's not a bad one as far as the Laid to Rest goes. Chrome Skull, it's not a bad one, but it was the only one that just made me go like, eh, you know, like fizzled out, and it's got such a big build up, but
it
I digress.
It made me so uncomfortable, knowing what's gonna happen, but then actually watching it, like, but it's fine. I appreciate they tried something, you know, it's a sequel, you gotta up the wow factor a little bit, try something new.
And they did.
And they did.
They swung.
That's right. It's all about taking the swings.
Well, cool, man.
All right, man.
I don't think I have anything else. I think I'm good.
All right. Hey, I would. I'd have people coming after me with pitchforks if I didn't ask for a God Country update.
Yeah. So it is looking pretty good. We have a solid chunk edited. I just edited our first, like, kill scene the other day, and it's fucking disgusting. It makes me uncomfortable. I sent it to a friend of mine, and I was like, hey, like, I don't want to spoil anything here, but I had to give a trigger warning. And I was like, you know, trigger warning for what you're about to see. And he's like, oh, I'll watch in a minute. And I get a text back, oh, my fucking God, why would you make me watch that? So that was the first bit of feedback I've gotten from any of our gnarly stuff so far. So it's coming. We got some reshoots to do, like probably 5 days of reshoots, if I had to guess. So once we get those knocked out, we are going to be editing ferociously. The plan is still to have it in festivals like this fall. Like, we're trying to hit festivals this fall. So that's the timeline.
All right. And I think I know the scene. Have I seen the scene you're talking about?
I don't know if you've seen the most current cut, but I put it on Slack as well.
Yeah.
So if you've seen that one, then yeah, you know the one.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's coming together, man. That's exciting. Exciting stuff. Awesome. Well, you know, you're more famous than me. People already know where to find you, but let's do the podcast thing anyway and tell people where they can find you and
God damn. You know, I mean, what right now, about. I mean modernhorrors.com is the main breadwinner right now. Podcast has been on the back burner for a long time. I'd love to come back and do more of it. There's so much shit happening in the horror, you know, arena right now. I really, really want to get back to doing a normal podcast. Been talking to Jacob about it. The timing's just still not working up yet. So trying to find a co-host, or maybe just rotate co-host or something. I'm trying to figure out what that next iteration of it looks like. But if you want to go back and listen to our show, if you want to go back and listen to some of the other cool shows we have on the network, it's not just the Modern Horrors podcast. We have the Final Girls Horrorcast. We have an exclusive and original narrative podcast called No Better Lot. It takes about a little over two hours to get through, but it's really cool. It's like a noir, surreal, Western horror kind of thing, very, very Lynchian. We got another kind of anthology show called Death, Dying, and Other Things. Just some cool stuff happening on the Modern Horrors Podcast Network. So follow that, Modern Horrors on Instagram, on Twitter, all that good stuff. And for updates, modernhorrors.com.
All right, awesome, man. Appreciate you, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man. I had such a good time. Haven't seen you in so long. I've got literally my dinner here, which if you can see, is about 15 pizza rolls, which is how life as a parent works these days. So.
That is how it goes. That is how it goes sometimes. I can attest to that. But hey, there's plenty of good times ahead too. I can promise you that as well.
Cool. Thanks for having me on, bud.
Yeah, man. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.